Hey, what's going on? It's the Unpopular Populist. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Left Populist, and also like my Facebook page at The Unpopular Populist. I will be posting the podcast on there and also some interesting articles for discussions. I want there to be dialogue because nowadays you do not get enough of that. So whether you identify as liberal or conservative, progressive, libertarian, independent, whatever, please like, share, subscribe, and spread the word to your friends. Well, guys, we made it. We made it to the 10th part of my 10-part series. We covered the economy, we covered climate change, we covered trade, we covered racial equality, we covered the military-industrial complex, we covered Wall Street. We covered a whole bunch of different topics, but today I wanted to have a little fun and do the political quiz with you guys. Now, this political quiz is isidewith.com, and it's a quiz to see which political parties you align most with and which candidates you side the most with. But the reason why I want to do it is to let you guys know my political ideology and some more thoughts on particular topics. So let's get into it. What up, y'all? So before I get into this political quiz, I do want to let you know there is nuance when it comes to this. There's not a yes or no answer to all of these. So I want to dive right into it. Let's do it. The first one is national security issues. And the question is, should the president be able to authorize military force against Al-Qaeda without congressional approval? Now, if you know how it works when it comes to war, the president is supposed to get approval from Congress before he intervenes militarily in any type of conflict. And we haven't done that since World War II. So Vietnam, the Gulf War, the war in Iraq, none of those military engagements had congressional approval. And we should go to Congress to get that congressional approval to have our military conflict. So I'm going to click no on that one. Should the U.S. assassinate suspected terrorists in foreign countries? Now, this is an interesting one because we are currently in Iraq, we're currently in Afghanistan, and we're killing terrorists on foreign soil. And I don't believe we should be doing that. I feel like our military should only be used in self-defense. And what we're doing right now in Iraq, what we did in Afghanistan, what we did in Vietnam, these were all offensive wars. And we shouldn't be on the offensive when it comes to military conflicts. We should only be on the defensive. If somebody attacks us on our soil, then yes, we should go to war, but it should only be in self-defense. No. We have social issues. What is your stance on abortion? Are you pro-life or pro-choice? This is another touchy topic. You have people on the right, mostly evangelicals, that are saying, you know, abortion is wrong in any way, shape, or form. And then you have people that are pro-choice and say, you know, it's a woman's body, it's their right, and they should be able to get an abortion at any time. And I am pro-choice. I believe that a woman's right to her body is her body, is her choice. And I believe that there should be also access to birth control. There should also be access to sex education. And there should be a lot more social services that help reduce the number of abortions. And that leads to the next question. Should the government continue to fund Planned Parenthood? Yes or no? And yes, they definitely should, because Planned Parenthood, as much as the right likes to say they're cutting up babies and things like that, it's not true at all. All they do is provide the means to get your abortion. They don't actually do this abortions at Planned Parenthood. What they do is they provide, like I said, the sex education, they provide the birth control, and they're a social service that helps reduce the number of abortions because they provide things like condoms and, birth control, Plan B, and things like that. So, I think the government should continue to fund Planned Parenthood. They also do things like STD testing. So, there's been instances where my friends have, had a scare, thought they had some, and they had to go to Planned Parenthood and they get their test and they walk out and they're like, "Oh, how much am I supposed to pay?" "Oh, you don't pay anything. It's just we just take donations here." And they didn't have to pay for their testing or anything like that. And you don't want people who do have STDs or STIs to spread that to other people. So that is something that we need to allow people to have access to. The next one, do you support the legalization of same-sex marriage? Yes, that's an easy one. I don't think the government should intervene on how on people that love each other. I don't think the government should be involved in your personal life about who you talk to or who you sleep with. So, I do support the legalization of same-sex marriage. Environmental issues. Should the government increase environmental regulations to prevent climate change? Yes. Because if we don't, we're gonna have, more drought, we're gonna have more famine, we're gonna have more extreme weather. And the proper term to actually use is climate change. I don't like to use the term global warming because a lot of people will tell you, well, it's very cold outside, so that means that the That means that there's no such thing as global warming, and that's not true. The way climate change works is it's measured over a long period of time. So a lot of times with climate change, you'll see extreme weather on both sides. You'll see, for example, you'll see Hurricane Harvey, you'll see Hurricane Maria in Houston, with damaging effects, more floods. You'll see droughts like you see in California. You'll see blizzards in the Northeast like you're seeing right now. So this is all an effect of climate change. And the way that we can curb that is government intervention and providing regulations such as a tax on carbon emissions, limiting how much carbon emissions a company can put out. So I do think we should have environmental regulations. So the U.S. withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement? No. Guys, Paris Climate Agreement is the bare minimum of what we should have. It's an agreement by all the countries to say that, hey, we do realize that climate change is real, and we do need to take some steps to prevent climate change. And a lot of people will tell you that we got an unfair deal in the Paris Climate Agreement. And it's not true because, according to a lot of scientific reports, that we emit the second most carbon emissions in the world. So by that standard, if we emit that many carbons, then we should have the harshest stance on climate change, and we should be doing the most to prevent climate change. So I don't think we should withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement because it's the bare minimum of what we should have, and it helps and it's fair to Americans because we emit the most carbon emissions. So the U.S. expand offshore oil drilling? No. One, we should provide more incentives for those companies to move to alternative energies, and two, I think that we should nationalize the energy sector. Not like Iran or Venezuela, like a lot of people would think. But I do think that we should, let's put it this way. If if they're drilling oil on our land, on public land, or private land for that matter, then I feel like that land is particularly owned, that whatever is below that land is the American people's. And the American people should decide what to do with that oil that's in the ground. And you see this in a lot of countries. You see this like Denmark, you see this in Bahrain. You'll see this in a lot of different countries, and what they're doing is actually taking their oil productivity and selling it off to move to alternative energy and green energy, solar, wind, water, things like that. So, I do think that we should not expand offshore drilling and that we should provide more incentives and also nationalize the energy sector. Here we go, economic issues. So, should the government make cuts to public spending in order to reduce the national debt? Nah, bruh. It's almost impossible to decrease the national debt. First of all, you would have to raise taxes so high that nobody would agree with them. And then you would have to cut all government spending programs. Like it said, you have to cut Social Security, you have to cut Medicare and Medicaid, you have to cut unemployment, SNAP program, you have to cut all these social benefit programs that you paid into to reduce the national debt. And you don't want to do that because it'll negatively affect the economy in a horrible way. Majority of Americans make $30,000 a year, $30,000 a year or less, and I have a strong feeling that a lot of those people in that bracket use a lot of public spending to just get by. So I think there's a lot of ways that we can cut the deficit, and that's doing things like cutting military spending, ending tax evasion. You have a lot of multinational corporations, stashing money in the Cayman Islands and Bermuda to evade taxes. You have also the wealthy doing that, and they also lobby a lot of politicians to not cut taxes for them. And but like I said, there's plenty of ways to reduce the deficit, but reducing public spending is not the way you want to do it. All right, should welfare recipients be tested for drugs? No. This is a giant waste of time and money. There was actually a study in Arizona. It wasn't necessarily a study, it was actually implemented where they actually tested welfare recipients for drugs. And they tested about 90,000 people, and only one of them tested positive for drugs. So the state of Arizona ended up wasting millions of dollars to drug test 90,000 recipients, and it saved them about $600. So it's a complete waste of time and money. So the US raised taxes on the rich. Yes. Yes, definitely. I don't even think there's an argument against it, but if there is, when you look at how taxes were paid from the 40s onward, it has been dramatically increased on the middle class people. So the uber rich, the ultra rich have been paying less taxes, and the middle class has been picking up the slack for them getting their taxes cut. So we need to get back to those Eisenhower ways where that marginal rate over X amount of dollars was around 90%. And when I say 90%, people freak out about how much money is being taken away. But you got to remember that this is a marginal tax rate. So not all your money is going to be taxed at 90%. It's just above a certain amount that you would be taxed at that much. So, alrighty, domestic policy issues. Should the internet service providers be allowed to speed up access to popular websites that pay higher rates at the expense of slowing down access to less popular websites that pay lower rates? No, they should not. I believe that these companies should treat all traffic equally, and we should continue with the openness of the internet. If imagine if a website like mine, the unpopularpopulist.com, shameless plug, had to pay a bribe to have faster, to have faster internet loading time. Now, I may be able to pay that, I may not, but we don't want that to be left to the ISP providers for my website. I don't want my website being slowed down because a lot of people, for example, I mean, even Google, they have an algorithm that measures your speed load, your page loading time. And if your page loading time isn't up to par, then you get pushed to the back of Google search results. So it's unfortunate for a lot of websites that wouldn't be able to pay that that bribe that they're asking for. And it's ultimately going to affect poor people because if, say, back in the day when you had channels 1 through 13, you would pay for that, and then you would pay more for channels 13 through 35, and then you would pay for 35 through 50. Well, it'll be the same thing for web pages. If you want Netflix, that may be 1 through 13. If you want Facebook, that may be 13 through 34. If you want Google, so on and so forth. So I think we need to continue having traffic treated equally, and we also need to continue with the openness of the internet. All right, should there be more restrictions on guns on should there be more restrictions on the current process of purchasing guns? Yes, definitely. We've seen this recently with the Parkland shooting. We've seen this recently with the shooting in Maryland. We've seen this with Pulse Nightclub. We've seen this with multiple times over and over again. So I do think we should take some steps. Close the gun show loophole. We need to expand background checks. If a person has a history of domestic violence, they shouldn't be have access to a gun. But sometimes things don't like that don't show up in background checks. We need to have a ban on assault style weapons and high capacity magazines. And I know people like to get into semantics about, oh, well, the gun that was used in this situation was an assault rifle, wasn't an assault rifle, or assault rifles have been banned since, this day. When we get into semantics, we lose the premise, and the premise is that these weapons can kill a lot of people in so little time, and a regular citizen shouldn't have access to these style of weapons. Do you support affirmative action programs? Yes, I do, and I think that affirmative action programs have treated people have gave people equal opportunity to take some to at these jobs that a lot of people they wouldn't necessarily get in the first place. And it not only helps the individual, but it helps all of us. If everybody with the same qualifications is able to get an opportunity at a position at a corporation, then it's better for all of us because it ends up putting more back into the economy, and the affirmative action programs end up giving us the opportunity to get further up that corporate ladder. All right, here we go. Healthcare issues. Do you support the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare? And this is one of those nuanced ones. I support the majority of Obamacare, and I think it was a move in the right direction, but I don't think it went far enough. When you go provision by provision, I like certain things, like you can stay on your parents' insurance until you're 26. You can you don't get turned away because you have a pre-existing condition. It closes the Medicare Part D loophole. Well, sorry, the Medicare donut hole. And I think that there are some positive aspects to Obamacare, but the one thing that I don't like, and a majority of Americans don't like, is the individual mandate. So even if you don't have medical insurance at the end of the year, you have to pay a tax. And this is how Obamacare stays in taxes in intact is from that tax. And I think Obamacare was great when it comes to those provisions that I mentioned above, but that individual mandate is what I don't like. I support a single payer system, and a single payer system is a lot more efficient, a lot more cost effective, and it covers everybody. I mean, we still have almost 30 million people in America that still have health care. So, even though Obamacare was a move in the right direction, I don't think it went far enough. So, on this one, I'm gonna put yes, but a mandatory single payer system would be even better. All right, should health insurance be allowed to deny coverage to individuals who have a pre-existing condition? Like I said, no, they shouldn't be allowed to deny you coverage. I think it's immoral to deny health insurance to people with pre-existing conditions. And I think that because you have a condition that you have you since you were born doesn't mean that you shouldn't have access to insurance. So, next one. Do you support the legalization of marijuana? Yes. Hashtag 420. Hashtag blaze it. Hashtag legalize, tax, and regulate it. In addition to that, I think we should also decriminalize it. So, yes, I do support the legalization of marijuana. All right, let's talk about education. Do you support increasing taxes for the rich in order to reduce interest rates for student loans? Yes, I definitely think we should. There was actually a proposal that was actually implemented during Bernie Sanders' campaign that would made colleges tuition free. And this was actually a tax on Wall Street speculation, which was a 0.5% tax, and it actually covered college tuition for every American who was eligible to go. Now, of course, there had to be some pre-enters. You had to have a certain GPA and things like that. But it made college tuition free, and that would also decrease the student debt crisis that we currently have right now. I mean, guys, the whole country is $1.2 trillion in student loan debt, and that number can get to 2 trillion, I believe, by 2025. So it's a big crisis that we have right now, and we need to do what we can to reduce those interest rate, reduce those student loans. And just as another side note, tuition-free college only costs $60 billion a year, and we spend $100 million on our 900 military bases around the world. So when people say that we can't afford tuition-free public college, they're lying. They're lying. They can't. You, it's possible to have an educated workforce and more informed, more active citizens with a better education. All right. Do you support Common Core and national standards? Yes, I do. Now, there is some nuance in this one too. When it comes to things like No Child Left Behind and things like that, which was a disaster, we shouldn't have that type of Common Core. But the premise of Common Core is what I agree with, and I think, and the premise of Common Core is that if you're in Alabama, where they'll probably teach, creationism on the same level as evolution, and you move to California, they want to make sure that you have at least the same foundation or the same education that you would get, state by state, set the foundation for a particular education that every student can have. And you want to make sure that that student that's going from Alabama to California has that foundation where he's like, okay, this is what they're teaching me in class, and this is what I'm going to also be learning in California. So I do support Common Core national standards. All right, foreign policy issue. Should the U.S. accept refugees from Syria? Yes, we should. And this is only after extensive background checks and continuous monitoring to show they have no terrorist connections. And That's usually what they do. I know that in the last election they were talking about we need to have extreme vetting and everything like that. And we already have very, very extreme vetting. So we have six department agencies. We have the Department of Homeland Security, we have the FBI, the Department of Defense, Department of State, the intelligence community, Human Health and Services. So we have six different agencies that do a very extensive background check, and that's going through family relations, going through travel patterns, going through cell phone records, social media presence, a whole bunch of things. So this refugee vetting process takes between 18 to 36 months. So even if you were a terrorist coming into America, I don't think you would want to go through this refugee vetting process that's going to take 18 to 36 months to do your deed. It's way too tedious, it's way too long. Biometric scanning, like I said, going through travel patterns, family relations, you're not gonna go through this vetting process. So I do think we should accept refugees from Syria. Should foreign terrorism suspects be given constitutional rights? Yes, this is another big issue. And it's actually an issue that that Obama actually campaigned on. He said he was going to shut down Guantanamo Bay. Now, he didn't do it, but he should have. And the reason why he should have shut down Guantanamo Bay is because it's this extrajudicial prison that we created for foreign terrorist suspects. We did torture there. We did anal feeding. We would put tubes in people and feed them that way. And it's very cruel and unusual punishment. And I think that if we are going to be that beacon of, justice and a fair trial and things like that, I think that we should have a due process for these foreign terrorism suspects. We shouldn't have this extrajudicial system where they're not given rights and they're tortured and given cruel, unusual punishment. I feel like just like U.S. citizens, terrorists should be given a fair trial in the federal courts. There's no need for something like Guantanamo Bay. So I say yes to that. Should the government increase or decrease military spending? We've been through this on almost every single podcast that I've had. And I definitely think that we should decrease military spending. I mean, we spend more than the next seven countries combined. And actually, during my research, I saw that we spend more than the next nine countries combined. And like I said earlier, we spend more than $100 billion a year on our 900 military bases around the world. I have no clue who we're afraid of, but we don't need 900 military bases around the world. It's just the military industrial complex, the lobbying that they do, and the gun, and also the gun manufacturers, the tank manufacturers, all buying our politicians in Washington and putting us in this perpetual war. So I do think we should decrease military spending. Now we move on to criminal issues. Should drug traffickers receive the death penalty? No, I actually don't believe in the death penalty. The reason why is because we can make the argument that the death penalty is cruel and unusual punishment. And with that being said, a lot of times that when people are on death row, they're found out to be innocent. And imagine if you're on death row, then you're innocent of your crime, and yet you still get the death penalty anyways, and come to find out that you were actually innocent the entire time. Well, if you were given life without parole, then there can be a chance that you are considered innocent. And this happens pretty often, too often on a death row. And there actually has been a study that one in 25 people on death row are found out to be innocent. So not only is the death penalty cruel and unusual punishment, there's a possibility that you may be killing innocent people. So if there's a chance that you might be killing, that the state might be killing innocent people, that I would consider that murder by the state. And I mean, you can sue the state, but you can't put the state in jail, or you can't, give them, or you can't, put them up for murder. So, I don't think drug traffickers should receive the death penalty, but they should get life. Now, should police officers be required to wear body cameras? This one's kind of nuanced, but I say yes. One, because there has been studies where, for example, actually my hometown Rialto, California, there was a study that showed that there was better police conduct, better interactions with the police, with them wearing body cameras. So I think this can protect the safety and rights of both the police officers and the citizens. So I think that police officers should be required to wear body cameras. On the flip side, there has been another study where it showed that it had no effect whatsoever. But I think the underlying factor to that is police acted accordingly because they had those body cameras. So, either way, I think that we should require police officers to wear body cameras. Should convicted criminals have the right to vote? Yes. If they serve their time, they should be given their rights back. If you release them from jail, and they paid their debt to society, I don't think they should have to pay their debt to society for the rest of their life. And if they're back in society, then they should participate in that society and have the right to vote. So, yes, they should. Electoral issues. Should a photo ID be required to vote? No. One, there is very little evidence that voter fraud even exists. And two, this will greatly disadvantage those who don't have the resources to obtain one. And the people who don't have the resources to obtain one are mostly minorities, whether it's money, transportation, or hours to get off work, they don't have the means to get a voter ID. And you saw this in Alabama recently. And Alabama shut down a good amount of his DMV, a good amount of his DMVs in majority black districts. And as a result, a lot of those black voters were disenfranchised and they weren't able to vote. And this can greatly affect things like congressional races, state senate races, state assemblies, things like that. It can grant, and unfortunately, a lot of minorities in places like Alabama or, another place like Arizona will get disenfranchised. And just in addition to having photo ID, not having photo IDs ha as a requirement, we should automatically register every citizen to vote when they turn 18, so they don't have to worry about are they registered here, are they registered there. I really think that it should be left up to the state as long as the citizen changes their address wherever they're living to maybe they move from California to Colorado and they change their address, the state should recognize that and then register them to vote in that area. Next one. Should foreigners currently residing in the United States have the right to vote? No, I don't think they should have the right to vote. And I would say I'm a moderate on this issue because I believe that if we have a path to citizenship, you become a citizen and then you have that right to vote. So yes, you should have that right to vote, but only if you're a legal citizen. Next one, should the Electoral College be abolished? That is a big one because this last election, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote and Donald Trump won the Electoral College. And I do think the Electoral College should be abolished, but not for the reasons that I think Hillary Clinton should have won. I feel like with her knowing that she needed to win the Rust Belt, with her knowing that she needed to win the Electoral College as well, and that she needed to campaign in places like Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Ohio, I feel like she we know the rules of the game, and we have to play by the rules. And she didn't play by the rules, and she lost. But aside from that, I do think that the Electoral College should be abolished. A lot of people would argue that it's a mob rule if we have one person, one vote. But then on the flip side, it's mob rule by a small amount of people. So if 1,000 people vote a certain way in Ohio, then it can sway the whole, or Florida, then it can sway the whole election. And that can be considered mob rule as well. So I do think we should have one person, one vote, because the majority of Americans want things like legalization of marijuana. We want a single payer system. Majority of Americans want these things, but because we have a system that favors things like the Electoral College, we don't get those things. So I do think we need to abolish the Electoral College. All right, transportation issues. Should the government increase spending on public transportation? Yes, I am a big proponent of having a New Deal. And a part of that, well, just to back up, if you're not familiar with what the New Deal is, that was actually a giant government spending plan proposed by FDR. And it actually put millions of Americans to work, and it created our interstate highway system. And I feel like we need to have another one of those. Right now, our infrastructure gets a grade of D by the Society of Engineers. And I feel like we need to upgrade our infrastructure, our freeways, our highways, our bridges. We just had a bridge collapse a couple days ago in Florida, and this was actually built by a private company. I feel like we need to do it the right way and have a publicly funded spending program on transportation. And in addition to that, it'll put a whole bunch of people to work. A lot of people are being displaced by these trade deals and things like that. If you provided infrastructure plan that put almost a million Americans to work, it would definitely jumpstart our economy. And that's what the stimulus package that Obama implemented was supposed to do, but it didn't do enough. Like I said, we need to do a mass overhaul of infrastructure. And those jobs can't be outsourced, so that's another positive thing, speaking of trade. So yes, we should increase spending on public transportation. Ooh, immigration. Should the U.S. build a wall along the southern border? Yes, and Mexico should pay for it. Nah, I'm just kidding. Nah, we shouldn't have a be trying to build this wall. One, it'll be too costly, and two, it'll be very ineffective. I mean, most of the people that come over here to America, they usually come by plane, and they also usually overstay their visas. That's usually where the majority of the immigration comes from. And when you look at studies of immigration from the US to Mexico, net immigration is zero, which means that a lot of people are heading south to Mexico, and a lot of people are heading north to the US at the same rate. So is with a net immigration of zero, having a wall to make our border less porous, is not necessarily going to work. So I don't think we should build a wall along the southern border. Next one. Should immigrants be deported if they commit a serious crime? Yes, that is an easy one. But I think they should actually get deported after they finish serving their sentence. So they serve their sentence, go through the due process here in America, serve their time, and then they get deported. Next one. Should illegal immigrants have access to subsidized health care? Yes and no. I don't think they should have access to, periodic checkups, preventative methods, but I think they should have access to government subsidized health care for things like life-threatening emergencies or an infectious disease or something like that. And when you look at the studies that have been done, for example, there was actually a study that was done between 2000 and 2011. Undocumented immigrants actually provided a surplus of $35 billion to Medicare between that time period. So a lot of times you'll see people like Ann Coulter or, Ben Shapiro saying they're living off our welfare. They're living off our dollars. And it's not true because they actually put more into the system than they do out of it. So I do think immigrants should have access to government health care, but only for like life-threatening emergencies or something like an infectious disease like Zika or something like that. All right, let's talk about science. Should the government require children to be vaccinated for preventable diseases? Yes, I do think they should. And there's a lot of myths. You'll see a lot. I see friends on Facebook sharing things that are totally inaccurate about vaccines. And one of the biggest myths is that, vaccines cause autism. And this was actually done by a scientist in the late 90s who has actually been discredited hundreds of times since then. And he actually said that vaccines cause autism. And it was one study out of thousands of studies that have been done on vaccines. I mean, you've seen it recently. There was an outbreak at Disneyland of measles, and this was because, the parents probably didn't believe in giving vaccines to their child, and that outbreak of measles ended up spreading to other children and stuff like that. And like the question said, this was a preventable disease. And if those parents took precautions when they were initially born to get those vaccines done, then we wouldn't have those outbreaks. I mean, imagine if, people stopped getting their vaccines for polio. We would have another epidemic in a heartbeat. So I do think that the government should require children to be vaccinated for preventable diseases. They're essential to protecting our children and for also the people who are too young to be vaccinated. Should producers be required to label genetically engineered foods, also known as GMOs? Yes, they should. The reason why is because I believe consumers have a right to know what's in their food. And I also trust the science of responsible food engineering, but I don't trust the motives of food companies selling them. So I do think that food science can be very beneficial. It can reduce famine in some places, but I just don't trust the motives of the food companies because they're always trying to make a profit. And when you're trying to make a profit, you take shortcuts. Do you support the use of nuclear energy? Woo, that is another tough one. I would say yes. But as long as there is no public subsidy, and this is also why we increase investment into cleaner, renewable alternatives. Now, you do have particular instances like in Japan where they had an earthquake, and it greatly affected their nuclear power plant, and it leaked radiation and things like that. But a lot of these nuclear power plants are outdated. They haven't been inspected since, the 70s. And we have the technology now to make nuclear to have nu make nuclear energy a lot more safer than it was before. So I believe if we invest in technology, we can harness nuclear energy and eventually use it to our advantage, unlike we do now, where it's affecting people and in the water and things like that. Last but not least, who is your favorite candidate for the 2020 presidential election? I'm just going to give you guys the people that they listed: Ted Cruz, Oprah Winfrey, Mike Pence, Michelle Obama, Marco Rubio, John Kasich, Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders, Ben Shapiro, or other. Bernie motherfucking Sanders. Ted Cruz is off the rails as far as the Republican Party goes. Regarding Oprah Winfrey, I love you, Oprah, but I do not want to see you run as president. Mike Pence is also off the rails. Michelle Obama, I don't think she necessarily probably wants to be in politics anymore. According to a lot of pictures and stuff that I've seen, she seems to be happy that she's at the White House. Marco Rubio, also don't agree with them on a lot of different issues. John Kasich, same thing. Joe Biden, seems like a very nice guy, seems like the working guy, but he doesn't seem like the right candidate as well regarding policy. I was watching an interview with him, and it didn't seem like he understood what happened in the last election. So I don't think he's gonna run as a populist left candidate. Elizabeth Warren, all right, we're getting warmer. We're getting warmer. I do love Elizabeth Warren. I love what she has done as far as banking regulations, and also not taking any corporate money. So I would like her on the ticket. Donald Trump, no, I think I'm good. This past year has been a lot for particular people, so I don't think so. And of course, Bernie Sanders, yes. And in addition to that, I would like to see a Bernie Sanders Elizabeth Warren ticket, but that's wishful thinking. And let's try to look forward to that 2020 primary to see who comes out of the Democratic Party. Ben Shapiro, no, not even close. I feel like Ben Shapiro is this pseudo intellectual, this new guy on the right that everybody seems to love, but I don't see the deal with him. He just seems like a fast talker, and because he's a fast talker, people think that he is this intelligent individual when almost everything he says is factually incorrect. So, Bernie Sanders, let's do it. 2020. Well, guys, we made it. We made it to part 10 of my 10-part series. I hope you guys enjoyed covering things from healthcare to the economy to education. And I hope that, we can cover a lot more issues. Now that my 10-part series is over, I'm going to be covering current events every Wednesday. So, my podcast will probably be a little bit longer now because I will be covering issues that happen throughout the week and also giving you an analysis and how can that affect you. So, I hope you guys enjoyed the podcast so far. Please like, share, and subscribe with your friends. And onwards and upwards. I'll holler at you guys next Wednesday with some current events. Peace.